Okay, good. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Gentle Healing after quite a long break, wasn't it? And in fact, while we were on break, you all finished the teachings of Inner Ramon and you started the year two review. And so what I'm going to do tonight, I'm not going to try to catch up on all 3 weeks. What I'm going to do tonight when I start sharing is I'm going to start with the beginning of the year two review, which was day 327 when we looked at the five steps for the majority. So I'll start there. But you all are invited to share anything you want to from the last 3 weeks. So just whatever you feel guided to share, I am here to hear. So is there someone who would like to get us started? All right, George, please take the mic.
I was the oldest, and I've got a brother and sister, and so it wasn't unusual for all three of us to get spanked. My dad often whip us, and so I always volunteered first, and that way I got it over with. So so anyway, I don't know why that came to mind, but let me lower my hand here. Anywho. Yeah, good to be back. Good to be back. And let's see here. Let me go to yesterday, daily contemplation 335. My heart does not know what it wants. Let me surrender to you, my Holy Spirit, as a loving slave surrenders to its master. Let me not think about either problem or solution. Let me only surrender in blissful trust of my master's all-knowing ways. And let me be happy to serve. Let me be happy to wait when the next order for service has not yet been given. And as I surrender to you, I let go of ego. Thank you for the gift of surrender. Amen. And this is a prayer of awakening. So I read that to share the message I got from Inner Wisdom. It almost doesn't seem like this is a message to me. So, and yet it's a message for all of us. You are now ready for an amazing transformation. You now see your life as good. It is a mere shadow, a vapor of what is coming. This is only a hint of the peace, the joy, the happiness that is available to you. Wait no longer as you hold the desire for total surrender to my guidance. You shall be the unimaginable we become one, wed in eternal bliss, any thought of two gone forever. Anyway, I like that message, so I will release the mic.
Thank you, George. I almost clicked leave meeting for some reason. And then you probably would have thought I was spanking you. Like you speak and I leave the meeting. but thank you for sharing that. I always love to hear Inner Wisdom. And I love the promises that any glimpses of peace that we're having are just a small taste of what's to come that kind of encourages us to keep going. So thank you for sharing. Who else would like to share? All right, Tony, mic is yours.
All right, I think I unmuted my mic. As George said, it is good to be back, and it's really nice seeing all of your faces here too. So this is the first time I think I've spoken since we been on this platform other than my ordination. So it's kind of nice. There's a lot of things that I wrote during the time that we were away. But the one thing I do wanted to share is something that I was struggling with, and it was right before Christmas. Christmas was kind of chaotic, and I really didn't anticipate that it was going to be as busy. I didn't anticipate that my mind was going to be as busy as it was, and I really felt like I got totally wrapped up in the Christmas holiday, and it was just quite amazing to see all that transpire. But anyway, what I wrote, this was on, I think it was the 19th of December. I'm not sure if that was part of it. I think this is part while we were gone. And it's about gift giving for coworkers and practicing surrender. As the gifts from my coworkers trickled in, I noticed my mind saying, now I have to give them a gift in return. And for a while, there was believing attention given to this thought. I was becoming anxious and stressed by trying to figure out what I could get each person in the clinic in such a short period of time. Originally, I hadn't planned on giving anyone gifts, but when I started to receive them, guilt and obligation started to take hold. At some point on the evening of the second day of this gift giving, there was a recognition that I can surrender and ask for guidance. What am I to do now? Immediately the answer came, and I felt to drop the idea to give gifts in return. Drop the thoughts of guilt and obligation. Immediately there was a sense of clarity and freedom in that moment. My first question was, what is gift giving mean to me? And the answer came that it meant that I was thoughtful and that I'm considerate and that I'm worthy of your love and attention. That's the mind's answer. And the second question was, who is the me that is placing meaning into gift giving? And the answer that came is, it is the me I believe myself to be. This is the exact mechanism of believing attention that keeps the true I hidden. I have created an identity with layers and layers of belief. I am willing now to excavate the layers of belief to discover the treasure of I am. And that's all I wanted to share. Thank you. I got to unmute myself.
Thank you, Tony. And yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing to look at when someone gives you a gift and you don't have one in return. That's something that's always challenging for people. But I always think it's best to follow inspiration. You know, if inspiration gives a gift, give it. If inspiration doesn't give, then stepping into the thinking to give a gift is just stepping into ego. So thank you for recognizing that. Is there someone else who would like to share? Tell you what, let me share from the write-ins. I have a few write-ins today. I think I'm going to go ahead and share from Mark first. So here's something that he's sharing with me. True knowledge is found by staying within the flow of the one, the self. You completely understand the acceptance part of your task. And here this is referring to the acceptance or loving all portion of surrender. The other portion was letting go of the I decide. I believe this is what we're looking at, but let's keep reading. You completely understand the acceptance part of your task. Not that you always practice it, but you understood the importance of acceptance as loving all. You are able to practice it intermittently with the objective of doing it more fully over time. You've never really internalized, though, the real meaning of surrender. Surrender is moving beyond the me or I like of decision making, and instead allowing the heart, the self, to drive your day-to-day decision-making process. Like with acceptance, the first step toward progress with surrender is to become more aware of your decision-making process, but beyond the loving all aspect of it. Really scrutinize every single little moment-to-moment decision you make in order to truly understand the magnitude of this change. As you see these moments simultaneously, you become aware of your heart space by expanding into it and allowing the flow of the true self to carry you. Use this practice as your entry point to surrender, just as you used awareness of your preferences as the entry point to acceptance. So, yeah, you know, becoming aware of that thinking mind and how that thinking mind is making decisions and really noticing it, you know, can definitely help us to move into surrender. I know when I started paying attention to my thinking mind and noticing it, one of the big things that I noticed is that it takes all sides, you know, like all sides of an argument. So, you know, for instance, in a relationship with a person, you know, a romantic relationship with a person, you know, sometimes, some days or even some minutes, the mind is saying, I need to get out of this relationship, you know, because of this and this and this. And then other times, other minutes, it's, oh my gosh, you know, I hope that he stays with me, because without him, I would be lost in this way and that way. And if you just start really noticing the mind, notice that there isn't actually any logic to it. There isn't any wisdom to it. And when you really start to see how confused the mind is, you'd have to be crazy to want to use it for your decision making, right? And so that makes surrender a lot easier. In fact, there's a line in NTI that says something about, when you see that the mind is confusion, that's a time of celebration, because that's when you also realize you no longer have to listen to it. So yeah, paying attention to the decision-making mind can really help move us towards surrender, because we see that it just isn't the wisdom we thought it was. So thank you, Mark. Is there someone else who would like to share? All right, Jay, mic is yours.
I just wanted to share that watching the mind has become a lot more clear to me, especially when I'm waking up in the morning. I can see maybe more clearly now than ever the number of thoughts that are going on. And so I do the mantra in the morning a lot when I get up. Before I get ready or do my practices or anything. And I find that it does very quickly dissolve the thoughts, just naturally by just saying the mantra in my head has a great effect in the morning. I don't know if any of you experience that too, but in the morning it really helps. I just wanted to share that. So giving up the mic.
Thank you. And, I New York this past weekend with Jasmine. Some of you might know that from Facebook. And this morning was my first morning back. We got back yesterday evening. And so it was funny, because as I sat in meditation this morning, I saw little thoughts about New York, you know, and I just thought that was so funny, because, 4 days ago, my mind couldn't have had thoughts about New York in that same way, because I hadn't been there yet. And I thought, you know, really the mind is it's nothing. You know, these aren't really thoughts. These are just, they're like little recordings. They're like little recordings that play, you know, little recordings. I mean, even though they may be slightly different than what actually happened, they're not thoughts. There's nothing, there's no wisdom to them. There's nothing to them. They're just little bitty recordings playing in the mind. And if I, you know, recently was in New York, the little recordings are about New York. If I was recently with Jay, the little recordings might be about Jay, but it's not thinking. You know, it's really interesting. Jesus says in A Course in Miracles, you think you think. And the more you watch the mind, the more you realize that's true, right? There's not really anything going on there. And again, that makes it a whole lot easier to surrender. Who else would like to share? Reggie's licking me. Actually, what's he licking? It looks like he's licking the I feel licked right here. All right, tell you what, let me share another write-in then. I'll go to Jill. Jill says, or actually Inner Wisdom through Jill says, trust that you already know all that need be known. It's only your mind that doesn't know it. Your heart has all knowledge directly from source. Your path of discovery is through the heart, as the mind cannot know what it doesn't know. You must go to the heart to be on the path of truth. This is the part I really like. Picture the path lined with wrapped gifts along the way. You have a choice to open the gift and be awed by what the heart reveals, or you can ignore gifts and be diverted by what the mind thinks. When you open a gift and view what is revealed without judgment and with allowance, then you will have aha moments of understanding. You must remember that gifts are infinite, and you must not assume you have experienced all knowledge to fully awaken after opening only a few of the gifts. Let the path unfold as guidance directs you. Treasure the gifts revealed and no longer be distracted by the mind. And I was given an image that's very, very similar once upon a time when I was learning to surrender instead of trying to make all of the decisions myself. And the image that I was given was to see myself as having, you know, a day at the park with my father, you know, someone not my physical father, but my heavenly father. But in this particular image, he was like a man, but I was a little girl and I could only see like up to his pants. So, like, I didn't see a face or anything. You know, I could see up to his belt. But I'm standing there with this really tall father in a park. And the image I was given was to trust that my father had a great day planned for me, but it was all a surprise. And just walk with my father holding his hand and enjoy the surprises as they were revealed. And that's really the same type of thing that Jill is sharing here, right? There's these gifts along the way and you open the gifts along the way. And in this case, these gifts are really wisdom, clarity, insight, and just enjoy the journey. You know, we want to have that strong desire for awakening. There's no doubt about that, or else we won't apply ourselves to this path. But it's kind of like at the same time, you don't want to be so anxious to get to the end, to the destination, that you miss the journey. You know, you don't want to be so anxious to get to the destination that you miss the journey. You want to enjoy the journey of awakening. And continue on that journey fueled by your desire for awakening. But, you know, treasure the path, treasure the discoveries, treasure, you know, the ahas, treasure everything that happens, and you'll find the path of awakening to be a very, very joyous path. And in fact, I have felt more than once that I'm really happy. I fell into ignorance or this dream, because if I hadn't fallen into ignorance or this dream, I couldn't enjoy the awakening, the enlightenment of awakening. So thank you very much, Jill, for sharing that. Is there someone else with something to share? All right, Lynn, the mic is yours.
All right. I think I'm unmuted. Okay, there we go. Hi, everyone. I am going back to Regina's tip, number 328. It says, trust the guidance that comes from within. And then I read NTI, Matthew 8. Do not ask for what you want. Ask me what it is that you need, and I shall lead you to it. But follow me in purpose and faith only, for if you seek anything else, you will not see what I am showing you. So then I asked, what would you have me see or hear or realize now? And what would you show me? And then I wrote, my thinking is not who I am, therefore it cannot lead me to know what I am. So the inspiration I got was, do not worry about the future. Allow my guidance to lead you. You will be led as the time is right. Many things happen that the eyes can't see. Trust that you are guided and allowing. Trust that you are healing. Each must heal in their own time. Healing looks different for each of you. Do not put judgments or restraints on healing or progress. Remember, you do not know. Continue to pray as guided, and all things work together for God. You will be shown your path as it needs to unfold. This is your path. This is your choice now. This is your purpose. Seek the guidance to do the peace and will of God, and give your willingness, and all will be given to you. So then, for New Year's, this was like New Year's Day, I was just in a state of great gratitude. So I was just like, my prayer was, thank you, God, for everything. Thank you for your guidance, your love, your support, and your healing. And what would you share with me today? So it was New Year, new beginnings, shed the past, let it go. Open up to the new beginning and allow me to lead. Be yourself and be happy and allow life to lead you. As it flows through the ups and downs of life, each have a purpose. So just allow it to flow through and just be through it all. No regrets. It is what it is. Let it be and be you. And then the other thing that I just wanted to share, it was also, I think, with one of the prayers that you had, Regina. It was Saturday for number 333, trust in me. And what came to me was, God is all is God. God is in me. I am in God. God loves all. God loves me. God loves. So I just wanted to share that little prayer too. All right. Thank you. Here you go.
Thank you very much, Lynn. And, this last thing that you shared about God is all, I remember when I was a fairly new spiritual student and I was contemplating something that really had that same teaching in it, that God is all, God is everyone, everyone is God. And this was a fairly new concept to me at the time. And I was really having trouble with that. And I think I was at work and I was in the cafeteria, but I was, as I was getting my food and paying, I was contemplating this. And I asked within, something about, I don't remember the exact question, but the question was something about, where is God? Like it's saying it's everything, but like, I can't see it. I can't see it. Where is it? And my eyes landed on this guy across the room who I really didn't like and really didn't respect. And I heard very clearly in my head, there's one, right? And I knew, and I just really got it at some level that I couldn't see God. I couldn't find God in the all because I had my own ideas about what everything was and who everyone was. And I went over and asked him if I could eat lunch with him. And I sat and ate lunch with him. And, you know, as we talked, I just kept contemplating the idea that, you know, that he was God, you know, part of the all, of course, but that he was God. And I remember after that, there were a number of people at work I didn't like. I'd worked there for like 9 years. There were a lot of people I didn't like. I started inviting someone different to lunch nearly every day so that I could sit with them and contemplate that they were God. And I actually found that extremely helpful. In a matter of maybe 6 to 9 months, I went from an experience of not liking several people in my daily environment to really loving them. And all I did was be with them and contemplate the fact while I was being with them that they were God. And they were still, you know, themselves, right? They were just being themselves. But I just really held it in my mind that I was eating lunch with God. And I found that very helpful. So thank you for sharing that. All is God. Something we really want to keep in our minds. And I got to do that this weekend too, right? While I was in New York with so many people. people everywhere. And I got to really contemplate that there was just God everywhere. Is there someone else who would like to share? Let me share from Lene then. Okay, so this is from day 332. Lene wrote, keep me focused on you as my guide rather than the pictures of this illusion I call world. And this is what inner guidance said. Remain identified with the teacher and not the student. When you are focused here, you recognize that you are having a human experience as a spiritual entity. That is when you will trust the directions given to you when asked. The body is merely a vessel to travel in, finding pearls of wisdom bestowed by yourself. The world is the highway that your vessel navigates across when seeking spiritual knowledge that is hidden within. Tap into this resource where nuggets of gold lie and are innumerable in quality and quantity. Look here to find the treasure that you hunt for. So, you know, that's another idea about just all of this wisdom that we find as we go through these daily contemplations, right? Being a treasure or a gift or a surprise. And again, I think that's really important because, as you guys know, we're moving into year 3, which is really going to be guided by your inner wisdom as you contemplate some quotes. But, you know, I expect the inner wisdom that each of you receive to be very unique and applying specifically to you. And I also want to say, I expect that, you know, on many days, it not only will apply specifically to you, but it will apply specifically to the current situations of your life. And don't be afraid of that. I think sometimes when people read quotes, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have ordered the book yet. Hopefully you have, The 7 Steps to Awakening, but, you know, it's just filled with all these different quotes, you know, just quote after quote. And sometimes I think when people read a quote, they expect this quote to mean something. And by that, I mean one thing, right? This quote means something. And they think what I'm supposed to do is get it right. This quote means something, supposed to get it right. And if you come into the 7 Steps to Awakening thinking the quote means something and you have to get it right, you might be using your intellectual head more than allowing guidance. I think the best way to look at these quotes are as primers. You know, like my grandma used to have an old well, and to get the water out of the well, right, you had to pump it a few times. And then after you pumped it a little bit, then the water would rise up and it would start to flow out of the well. And you could even let go of the pump. It would just flow. So the quotes are like the primers, the pump, just to get your inner wisdom flowing. And you're going to be contemplating the quotes, and you'll be contemplating about four quotes per day. And so you might read four quotes, and then you might find yourself really attracted to three words in one of those quotes. And if you find yourself really attracted to three words in one of those quotes, I recommend that you trust that attraction and that you follow that attraction and see what comes of it. And again, it won't only be guidance specific to you, but it could be guidance specific to a situation that's in your life right now, a financial situation, and you're stressed about it, or a difficulty you're having in a relationship, or something you feel guilty about. And just let inner wisdom talk to you. And, you know, just and see it as gifts, as gold, as, you know, as wonderful ahas that are leading you along the path. And don't worry about getting this right. And in fact, I think that for each and every one of us, myself included, if we read and contemplate a quote on one day, and then on a different day, read and contemplate the same quote, we're going to get something different, because we're going to get what we need that day. It's really our daily bread we're going after, right? We're going to get what we need that day to move us further along this path. And so if you go into year three with the attitude that we've seen show up in some of the contemplations tonight, that you're, you know, going on a journey and it's like a treasure hunt, and you're going to be pleasantly surprised by all of these wonderful insights along the way, and one by one by one, they're taking you somewhere, I think you're going to find year three to be a lot of fun. If you put the stress on yourself that these quotes mean something, meaning one thing, and you have to get it right, you might not have any fun at all. So be willing to let it be whatever it's going to be for you. And over the year, I would expect that, well, I don't know how else to say this, so I'll just say it this way. You'll get better and better and better at tuning into inner wisdom and being guided by it and trusting it, even more so than now. Do we have someone else who would like to share? All right, I'll tell you what, let me share one more then, and then if there's no one else, I'll move into my commentary. Let me go ahead and share from Teresa. Teresa wrote, "Inner wisdom, show me how I can be in the thought of you today." And inner wisdom said, "Practicing the loving all method is the way to be in the thought of me today. Remember, the thought of me is not different or outside of you. Loving everything just as it is the perfect way to not resist our presence. It is the way not to fall into the trap of engaging with the mind." I love this part. Sounds selfish, but it's not. Listen, this is inner wisdom speaking. "I want you all for myself. That is, I want to give you everything. When you are full of mind stuff, there is no space for me, even though I am closer to you than your breath. The way to enjoy our deep communion is to be devoted to everything. Everything and everybody is held in existence by my love. Nothing can exist without that. Therefore, when you resist anything, you are resisting love. Relax, my darling. There is nothing for you to resist or strive for. It is all here now in pristine aliveness, right where you are. You can't step out of it. It is your life. Love all appearances, happenings, and everybody today, because when you do so, you are loving me. Oh, how sweet is life when you see it as it truly is. That is why I said in the gospel, the kingdom of heaven is right here now, but people don't see it. Today, be one of the seers, and what you shall see will take you right home into the thought of me. So thank you, Teresa. And do we have someone else who wants to share? It's funny, I'll just confess with you all, although I am talking, and in fact, I'm talking quite a bit. I don't feel like talking tonight. So it feels, it's a little bit funny to be talking and sharing when I don't feel like talking. I feel like being quiet. And I kind of giggle because, of course, I heard Don asked me to talk even longer tonight because there's a spare half hour after me. So I thought, well, we'll see. But I really don't feel like talking at all. But we'll see what happens as I continue forward. So as I mentioned, what I'm going to do is just go over the review of year two. I will tell you what's going to happen over the next week. Tomorrow, you're going to be looking at the 12 lessons or the 12 summary lessons from NTI. And the day after that, you're going to look at those 7 steps to awakening that NTI Revelation had. And then the day after that, you're going to start Inner Ramana again. And we're going to go all the way through Inner Ramana again, just like we did the first time. So although I haven't had the opportunity to comment on some of the messages in Inner Ramana because they were in the 2 weeks that we were taking off for the holidays, I will have the opportunity to comment on them because we're going to go through the whole book again. So I'm definitely not concerning myself with trying to go back and comment on those messages that I didn't get to comment on. I know another opportunity is coming. So the only thing that I'm going to comment on is the year two review that we're going through in between Inner Ramana and Inner Ramana. And that review started on day 327, which was a little over a week ago. And it started with a review of the 5 steps for the majority, which really is, it's from Michael Langford. But what it's really doing is it's really asking us to practice kindness in every single one of our relationships. And some of the things I love that Michael Langford writes in those 5 steps for the majority are things like, you know, be kind even to someone that you think doesn't deserve your kindness, right? And be kind to even these brief encounters, right? Be kind. And I was recently reading a book by Nisargadatta Maharaj, not I Am That, but a different one. And in that book, he was also very clear. It's funny because he's kind of a passionate guy, which people often saw as yelling at them and throwing them out of his house. So it's kind of funny coming from him. But he also seemed to think that kindness was an absolute criterion for the spiritual aspirant. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting if you contemplate, why is kindness so important for the spiritual aspirant? And when I contemplated, the only answer I came up with is that, well, because if I'm not kind, I'm listening to ego. And that's what I'm doing. I'm listening to judgment. When I'm not kind, I'm putting myself above another person. I'm thinking I'm right and they're wrong, or I'm smart and they're stupid, or I'm important and they're, you know, an annoyance in my way, an obstacle. You know, there's something going on there in my mind whenever I'm not kind, that's ego. And so by making kindness, forgive this next word for a moment, I'll come back and address it. By making kindness a rule that I live by, what I'm really doing is committing to letting go of the ego. One of the things that I think is pretty important, again, to the best of our ability, is that we be kind even when we don't feel kind. You know, some people might call that repression, but it's not if you listen carefully to what I'm saying. I think of it more like trying to quit smoking cigarettes or trying to quit eating cookies every night or anything else, any other habit that you may have that you're trying to quit. You can't quit smoking cigarettes by smoking cigarettes. You also can't quit smoking cigarettes, at least most of us can't, by waiting for the cravings to go away first. Same thing with cookies. You can't quit eating cookies by eating cookies, and you also can't quit eating cookies by waiting for the cravings to go away first. If every time the craving comes for a cookie or for a cigarette or whatever else you have as a habit, you give into it, you're never going to transcend that habit. And really being, I don't know what word we want to use as the opposite of kind, being thoughtless, being rude, being mean, being selfish, you know, I don't know what word we want to use, but that's a habit too. You know, not treating people with kindness is a habit. And you don't overcome the habit by continuing to not treat people with kindness. And you also can't overcome the habit by expecting the feeling of being kind all the time to come first. Just like, you know, you can't wait for the cravings to die out before letting go of the cookies or the cigarette. In other words, there are going to be times when on the inside you are just filled with this strong desire to tell someone how stupid they are, or, you know, to be really angry at someone or whatever. And if you really want to transcend the ego, which is what transcending not being kind is, you need to restrain yourself from acting on that urge. Just like you need to restrain yourself from smoking that cigarette when you have the urge to smoke, or if you want to quit cookies, restrain yourself from eating those cookies when you have the urge to eat a cookie. Almost every habit that we change starts with some level of restraint. Again, if we don't restrain ourselves, we're just falling into the habit again. This would be repression if you stopped there. If all you did was restrain yourself, it would be repression. And that at some point would backfire. But it's not repression if you continue with the next steps. And the next step that I consider absolutely important and completely healing is what we know as rest, accept, and trust. So on the inside, you know, you just want to kill someone. On the outside, you be as kind as you possibly can. And then you remove yourself from the situation. That's what I recommend whenever, you know, there's a really strong emotion going on. And you practice rest, accept, and trust. You know, you rest the mind from any chatter, from any stories that are going on that's trying to feed your anger or your upset. You accept whatever feelings you're having right now that are not kindness. You accept them. You allow them to be. And you trust that by taking these two steps, you are healing. And if you learn to practice rest, accept, and trust every time the urge comes not to be kind, pretty soon that urge not to be kind will quit coming. And you'll find kindness to be natural. Even when you need to have a difficult conversation with someone, you'll find that you can have a difficult conversation without ever leaving kindness. Like kindness is just a natural part of who you are. So that's how we really started the year with NTI. And this is no different than the teaching, you know, love your brother, right? It's just a different way of wording it. But that's where we started with NTI, was with the basics of kindness. And so that's the first place that I went in our review, was the basics of kindness. And again, That includes kindness with people that you think don't deserve kindness. And that includes kindness even with people that you're with only for a few seconds, right? The person that bumps into you, you know, on the streets of New York, right? Always being kind. Always. I mean, it's an always rule. Now, I used the word rule earlier, and I said I would come back to that. For me, I see rules differently than some people do, and I just want to talk about that for a moment. Some people see rules, you know, like make being kind a rule, those kinds of rules. Some people see rules as something they can judge themselves against. So if I've decided that being kind is a rule I want to live by, and then I lose my temper with someone, and I'm short with someone, now I have to judge myself as failing. That's how most people see rules. That's not how I see rules. That's not how I use the word rule when I say make it a rule to be kind. I see a rule as something I never quit attempting to master. That's a rule. I never quit attempting to master it. Just never, you know. And that's a rule. So it doesn't mean that you won't slip along the way. You most certainly will, unless you're, you know, a much better person than I am. But when you slip, you know, I recommend looking at it. Every time we slip, there was a thought in our mind that caused that. If you can go back and look at that thought and discover why you slipped, what thought were you believing in the moment that you weren't kind to someone, that's going to be really, really helpful. But learning from it and judging yourself for it are two different things. So a rule, when I have a rule, and I make it a rule for me, a healing rule I'm talking about, like the rule to always be kind, I just mean I'm never going to stop attempting to master it. This isn't a phase I'm going through, right? This is a rule that I live by. And I'll continue to apply myself to it and continue to get better and better and better at it. In fact, when we were reading Mark's writing from Inner Wisdom earlier, they were talking about the loving all method, but it said you are able to practice it, meaning the loving all method, you are able to practice it intermittently with the objective of doing it more fully over time. That to me is a rule. It's a rule to live by the loving all method. That's a rule that I make for myself. And so what? I'm intermittent about it now. But I continue to practice it intermittently with the objective of doing it more fully over time. It's not a phase I'm going through. It's not something that I'm just practicing this week and the next week I'll forget all about it. It's now a rule that I live by. And it's interesting. I don't know why I use that word rule. In fact, I could probably look it up and see if it has some kind of an interesting meaning. It's just the word that I use. Well, a rule has a lot of different meanings. Probably the one that fits the best is the normal or customary state of things. But what I was going to say, it's interesting, you know, when we were in Italy, you know, we visited St. Benedict's monastery and we visited some churches started by St. Francis. And both St. Benedict and St. Francis, and I'm sure many, many other religious leaders along the way, have written rules for their followers. And these rules are ways of life that they're to continue striving toward, right? That's it. Just ways of life that they're to continue striving toward. And so kindness to me is that's why I call it a rule. It's a rule that I continue to strive for. Loving all method can also be a rule that I continue to strive for. Discernment between the wrong mind and the right mind and choosing to live by the right mind and disregard the wrong mind is a rule that I live by and continue to strive for. So again, kindness was the first rule that we started with this year. And because that was a whole year ago, I thought it would be nice to go ahead and bring that one back because it really is a very important rule. And again, if you pay any attention to yourself, you notice whenever you're not kind, you're an ego. That's what you're going to find out. And so by living by kindness, again, you are transcending ego. The second thing that we reviewed on day 328 was asking for guidance. Lynn talked a little bit about this. Lynn shared with us a little bit from that section that we read that day about not asking for what we want, but asking for what we need. I think probably what I want to review now, because again, we're going to be completely dependent on our inner teachers as we go into the seven steps to awakening. And, you know, what I would probably recommend, and Michael Langford's going to have some instructions in the beginning of the book too, about how to read and contemplate the quotes. And one of his instructions is going to be that you read the quotes at least three times. And I recommend doing that too. I do the same thing. I read the quotes at least three times. But what you might do, again, you might feel an attraction to a few words, and you might say, you know, what do these words mean for me? Why am I attracted to these words or something? But if you don't feel an attraction to something specific within the quotes, you might just read the quotes three times slowly. Just kind of be with them as you read them. Read the quotes three times. And then after you've read the quotes three times, you might just ask, what would you like to share with me today? Right? Just ask it. You've already kind of digested the quotes if you've read the quotes three times. And so you can trust that whatever comes when you ask, what would you like to share with me today, is being kind of primed by the quotes. And just let it come. I mentioned earlier, I don't want to see people thinking this quote has a meaning and I have to get it right. I also want to avoid completely, if possible, so I guess this is a new rule, avoid people thinking about the quotes. You know, I want to avoid people thinking about the quotes. I just want you to read the quotes, marinate in the quotes, and then let inner wisdom come to you. And so by asking really open-ended questions like, what would you like to share with me today? What is it that I need to see or realize in these quotes, or something like that? That's really going to allow inner guidance to come in and share with you what you need, whatever it is that you need that day. And that's the most important thing about guidance. So again, probably the thing that I want to emphasize the most from day 328 is asking broad, open-ended questions. What would you like to share with me today? What do I need to see or realize from these quotes? You know, something like that. And then just see what comes without trying to figure out what the quotes mean. In fact, some of the quotes, if you're like me, you're going to read some of these quotes, you're going to have no idea what it means. You might even for a moment, if you listen to the ego, feel a little bit like an idiot. Because some of these quotes are written in somewhat of a complicated use of the English language. You know, in fact, they weren't even written in English originally. I have been amazed when I felt like I didn't understand at all what that quote just said, but I went ahead and read it three times slowly, and then paused, and then just asked, what is it that I need to see? Amazed at what came. And in fact, typically after just going with whatever came and then going back and looking at the quote, a quote that I didn't understand, you know, half an hour ago is now very simple for me. You know, it's just amazing how from within myself, all of that clarity came. So again, when we look at these quotes, we don't want to be thinking about them. We don't want to be trying to figure out what they mean. And we certainly don't want to be trying to figure out what we think the right meaning is. We just want to contemplate it. We just want to be with them, read them, be with them, and then let inner wisdom come in whatever way it's going to come. And like I said, asking very open and very, very open-ended questions is a great way for that to happen. So that's really what 328 was all about that day. Does anybody have any questions about guidance, by the way, about asking for guidance? Or insight or clarity. Okay, Jay.
I was just curious, do you still experience guidance in practical matters?
Oh yeah, guidance in practical matters is that gets simple. I think what gets in the way of a lot of people not thinking they don't experience guidance in practical matters, I actually think a lot more people do experience guidance than they realize. I think what gets in the way of people thinking that they are realizing they're experiencing guidance is trying, and Jay, you might laugh at this, is trying to think about the future. You know, people want to know their guidance.
I would never do that, Regina.
People want to know their guidance about this thing they're doing 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now or 6 months from now. And guidance comes in the moment. So the best way to receive guidance is to be okay with not knowing, you know, how you're going to resolve this thing in 2 weeks. Just know that when it's time to know, you'll know. And until then, you don't need to know. And actually, if you can just accomplish that one habit, you'll find that guidance actually comes quite naturally. And I think it would come to everybody. I don't think anybody even has to be on a spiritual path. They just have to let go of wanting to know everything. and you know what to do in the moment. And that's the guidance, that's the practical matter guidance. And that's very simple. So just quit wanting to know before you need to know.
Well, that's no problem at all. I'll do that tomorrow. Did you catch that? I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah. Just keep practicing and it will come. But that's very easy. Practical guidance. Yeah. Any other questions about guidance? All right, then. The next thing that we looked at on day 329 was transcending the resistor by loving all. And really, the opposite of loving all is judgment. That's the opposite of loving all, judgment. And in this type of judgment we're talking about is the kind of good and bad judgment, I like and don't like judgment. That should be or should not be judgment. And what's embedded in that type of judgment is I know and I'm right. You know, so if I say, is the government still shut down? Does anybody know if the government is still shut down? Okay, if I say, a government shutdown should not last this long. Those guys up there, they don't care about us. They're blah, 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 blah. I mean, I think I know, and I think I'm right, right? I mean, that's just embedded in any judgment that we pick, right? I know, and I'm right. And whenever we think I know and I'm right, therefore, whenever we judge, we're completely identified with the false self. Completely identified with the ego. The loving all method is the undoing of that, because the loving all method isn't judgment. I mean, that's just the bottom line. You know, there shouldn't be a government shutdown that lasts this long, and loving the experience of a government shutdown. You know, I don't know if any of you guys have been affected by it. I personally have not been affected by it, but I do know people that have been affected by it. In La Vida, right now, everybody in La Vida is being told to get flood insurance. Guess what? You can't get flood insurance during a government shutdown. You know, so you need to love the experience of not being able to get flood insurance when you want to. Love the experience of any anxiousness that comes up because there's thoughts about there's going to be a flood and I'm not going to have insurance. And the way that I have learned to practice the loving all method is by seeing my life, my experience with the world as a movie. Or for some people, it might be as a novel, might be more helpful. But when I watch a movie, when I love a movie, and I come out and I tell you how much I love that movie, it's not because everything in that movie happened in the way I thought it was supposed to happen. In fact, often the movies that I love the most, something very tragic happened, right? I mean, it was dramatic. I cried along with the characters, right? It wasn't because it was some movie where everything happened in a certain way that I think things should happen. So it occurred to me one day that if I could love a dramatic film, I could love a dramatic life. I just had to love it in the same way that I love a film. I have to love the experience of it, right? Love the experience of anxiety. Love the experience of fear. Love the experience of sadness. And whenever you're practicing the loving all method and you're just loving whatever experience is happening, just like you would love it if it was happening in a movie or a good book, you're actually not judging. You're actually not in your I know and I'm right mind. Therefore, you aren't identified with the false self. At best, you're identified with a general experiencer who is experiencing experience, right? But you're not identified with that false self that has all of these opinions and all of these preferences and this history. You're more closely identified with beingness when you're practicing the loving all method. And you're really just going to enjoy life more too. So by practicing the loving all method, you transcend the resistor, which is the imposter self or the false self, which is the I know and the I'm right mind, because you are transcending judgment and just loving whatever arises. Any questions about that before I move on? All right, day 330 then, we talked about transcending the resistor through surrender. And that's because there's really two types of judgments. One is the type of judgment that I said is more like the good and the bad. Like a long government shutdown is bad, for example, that type of judgment. And that's transcended through the loving all method. But the other type of judgment is just decide. You know, like I decided, I don't know what I decided. I decided I don't want to take up the next 25 minutes talking, so I'm going to quit now. Right? I decided that. That was my decision. I decided. That's a type of judgment. And so what transcends that type of judgment, and that type of judgment really emphasizes the me. You know, I decided, right? That really emphasizes the me. This is my life. I'm going to decide what I want to do with it, right? So the way that you transcend that type of judgment is through surrender, through following intuition. And the only way I found to do this, I told you the way I practice the loving all method is by seeing my life as a movie and choosing to love it, just like I would love a movie where things happen. Gosh, I just completely lost that thought. I'll have to see if it comes back. The way that I transcend, I'll just say the sentence and see if something comes out at the end. See what I mean about not needing to know until you need to know? The way that I transcend the I decide mind and I go with surrender is by realizing. Nope, nothing's coming. I mean, something's coming, but it's a picture. By realizing that there's a flow of life. And the flow of life is, it's funny because I think the reason I'm having trouble with this is because there's no me in the image. When I close my eyes, what I'm seeing is just this river flowing, And by letting go of I decide, I am just in that river. I'm just a part of that river. There's not a me separate from the river. And so I guess the way that I'm able to follow the intuition instead of the mind is by having absolute trust in that river. Having absolute trust that, again, when I need to know something, I'll know it. And even if I say I decide, even if I say I am going to talk until 10 p.m. or I am not going to talk until 10 p.m., that's actually, I would say, that's just my mouth moving. Because until I either do or don't talk until 10 p.m., I don't actually know whether I will or won't. Because it isn't me, it never is me deciding. It's this flow happening, right? It's the flow happening. So I'm not deciding, I'm discovering. And if you start paying attention, you'll notice how many times in your life you think you're deciding something and then you end up doing it differently. Because you never were deciding. That's just mental chatter. You don't really know what you're going to do until you do it. You don't really know what you're going to say until you say it. And all of the thinking that tells you what you're going to do or what you're going to decide is just mental chatter. But by believing that mental chatter, you think you're separate from the flow. By waiting to discover what you're going to say or what you're going to do, you know, being in the moment, surrendered, you can't find yourself separate from the flow. Sometimes when you read like Nisargadatta Maharaj or Ramana Maharshi, what they call the decider is the doer. They keep telling you you're not the doer. That's the same thing. So you feel like the doer when you think you're making the decisions. When you think, I've decided I'm going to talk until a certain time, or I've decided I'm not going to talk until a certain time, you think you're the doer. But if you just wait and find out what you're going to say and what you're going to do, you're not going to be able to find yourself separate from the flow. And the fun thing is, the body keeps right on saying things and keeps right on doing things, but you lose all sense of I'm doing it, I'm deciding. You're watching even your own body move and even your own body talk, right? And this is often called merging with the source, which would be the river or the flow. On day 331, we just reviewed the loving all method. And again, what always stands out to me is really interesting about the loving all method when I review it is that the loving all method is just loving whatever's happening. It isn't determining that things should happen in a certain way. So for example, at least I don't know what you guys are hearing in me tonight, but I know what I'm perceiving in me tonight. And I'm perceiving like some stammering happening. It's almost like my speaking isn't well oiled right now. It's a little rough, right? It's not the way that I would imagine a very eloquent sharing happening. It's kind of edgy and like that. So the loving awe method says love that. You know, love the fact that tonight it's edgy. It has short stops and goes, and there's a little bit of stammering happening. Love that, right? It's not about, oh, it shouldn't be this way. Let me change the way I'm speaking and then love it. It's love it however it's happening. I love the example that Michael Langford gives about if a vase has fallen, you don't have to watch it fall and break in order to love it. You can love seeing it fall. You can love reaching out, and you can love the fact that you caught it, or love the fact that you missed it. If that's what it is, it's just loving whatever's happening. If I was judging myself for this speaking tonight, that's kind of jumpy and edgy and not real smooth flowing, then I can love myself for judging the speaking and the way it's happening tonight. I don't have to let go of the judgment. This is crazy, but true. I don't have to let go of the judgment in order to love the experience. If the judgment is a part of the experience, then I love the judgment too. You know, that's what's so beautiful about the loving all method, is that you just love whatever is happening exactly the way it's happening. Both what's happening inside of you and what's happening outside of you. Nancy says that my speaking is working for her. yeah. And I think it's great to review the loving all method about every 6 months or so, if you're making that a rule that you're living by. You know, you always, a lot of it, certainly you remember because you're living by it, but there always seems to be a line or two that I've forgotten. And I imagine it's probably the same for you guys. On day 332 and 333, we reviewed awareness, watching awareness meditation. And the primary point that was made about that is what we're really doing when we're in awareness, watching awareness meditation, is that we're in a concentrated time of letting go of the false and focusing on the true. And it's absolutely true for me. I imagine it's absolutely true for everyone, that I am much more focused on letting go of the false and embracing the true on meditation than at any other time. It doesn't mean that I totally ignore that type of discernment when I'm walking around. When I'm up walking around and I'm talking to people, I still do my best to let go of the false and focus on the true, but it's nothing like meditation. Yeah, it doesn't have anywhere near the same quality of focus. And so that's the purpose of meditation. And that's very, very important part of our practice. And I mentioned in the tip that there's really two types of meditation I recommend. And to me, they're really the same. One is called awareness, watching awareness, and the other one is loving consciousness. I like to practice loving consciousness. But I call it, it's funny, I practice loving consciousness and I call it awareness, watching awareness. Because again, to me, they're the same. To this day, when I practice loving consciousness, I begin with one of the audios on our website. The loving consciousness meditations, they're me. They're me reading from Michael Langford's book that teaches loving consciousness. But it's me and silence. And occasionally you hear Jamie sniffing me. She'd always come over and sniff me when I was meditating to see what the heck I was doing. So when you hear those sniffs in the meditation, that's when she gets up and decides to come over and sniff me. But it's me and silence and an occasional sniff. And what's really nice about that is, you know, I read an instruction every 10 minutes during the 30-minute audio. The last time I read the instruction is at the 30-minute point. And after I read the instruction the last time at the 30-minute point, the audio stops. But because it was silent in between the instructions, you don't, at least I don't even notice that the audio stopped. So it allows me to use the audio for the first 30 minutes to really guide me into a deep meditation. And then I just keep on meditating for as long as I can that day. You know, like if there was music playing, there would be a little disturbance for me when the music stopped, when I was aware that the meditation ended because the music stopped. But since there is no music, I don't even notice that the guided meditation stopped. And I can just keep meditating for as long as time allows that day. And when Karen did the awareness, watching awareness meditation audio, she did it the same way. There's silence in the background. She reads an instruction about every 10 minutes. And then when it just ends, it just ends. She also has some hour-long ones that have music. But I prefer the ones with the silence because, again, then when the guided meditation ends, it brought me deep into meditation. And then I can just continue without a disturbance. Now, Karen has been recording meditations for you guys this year. She's not going to record meditations for year three. So what I recommend, if you still like to be guided into meditation like I do, is that you go back to the Awakening Together website underneath audios and videos, and then, of course, underneath meditation audios, and use either the AWA audios, the ones without music, or use the loving consciousness meditations, which don't have music, just to get you started. And then you can meditate for as long as you like or as long as time allows in your life that day. I also use, when I have to, which is about 90% of the time, I use an alarm to end my meditation. And I use a little app called Insight Timer. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but I like Insight Timer very much. So if I know that I only have time for an hour and 45 minutes of meditation today, and then I have to do something, I'll just set Insight Timer for an hour and 45 minutes. If I want to challenge myself and I want to, I have 2.5 hours and I want to make sure I don't quit early, I will also use Insight Timer, and I'll make it a rule that I'm not going to quit till I hear the timer. And that will keep me there longer, because what I'll find after a certain amount of time is I'll start getting the urge to quit, because maybe I usually only meditate for closer to an hour and a half because that's all the time I have. And so even on a day when I have more time, that urge to quit starts rising up. And so I'll go ahead and set an alarm for a longer time and just say, you know what, I have this much time and I'm going to stay that long. I would say I only meditate maybe 10% of the time without an alarm at all. I either use an alarm to let me know when I need to stop or to challenge me and keep me there longer. And again, I always use the loving consciousness recordings for the first 30 minutes to bring me into a nice meditation. That takes us to day 334. 334 was really talking about how believing attention causes suffering. And it pointed out that it causes suffering in two ways. One, it distorts your perception. And the other, it actually creates manifestations. Distorting the perception is an interesting one. Because that means that what you think you're seeing isn't even manifest. It isn't there. Like, you might think somebody is judging the heck out of you when not a single thought of judgment crossed their mind, right? That's just not what they were doing in that moment. And yet you think you saw them judging you. So the interesting thing about distorted perception is it's not even a manifestation. You are completely 100% making it up. And that's one of the things that believing attention can do to your thoughts. And believing attention through distorting perception causes all kinds of problems. You know, you might accuse your spouse of something that your spouse didn't think, say, or do, right? Or accuse a coworker of something, or start not speaking to someone because you think they're always thinking things that they aren't thinking. I mean, it just causes all kinds of problems. But interestingly, distorting perception isn't the only thing believing attention does. It can actually create circumstances. You know, your believing attention on a certain type of thinking can create more thoughts of that line of thinking and bring them into your mind, or even bring them into someone else's mind. Or it can create form situations like a car accident or cancer, or it can do all kinds of things. So the interesting thing is, it doesn't really matter whether it's just distorting your perception and the thing really isn't there, or whether your believing attention actually created the thing, the circumstance. And either way, you're going to suffer. And that's really the point, that this believing attention on thought is always the cause of suffering. And so again, the encouragement that comes with seeing that is, you know, the way Byron Katie would word it is to learn not to be a believer. She calls people who give believing attention to their thoughts believers, and you want to become a non-believer, right? You don't want to be a believer anymore. And so to really see that all of your suffering is caused by your own belief and thoughts. And again, sometimes people say, but there was an earthquake and my house did fall down. Okay, well, true. But that earthquake and that house falling down came from people giving believing attention. It creates circumstances. There's just nothing. There's just nothing in manifestation that doesn't come from believing thoughts. And of course, the day after that, which was yesterday, we reviewed the code. And really, the code is all about the same thing. You know, the code talks about the individual interpretation, but it also talks about how things are delivered to the whole, right? So like the earthquakes, the car wrecks, the diseases, right? Again, both come from believing attention on thoughts. And again, the more we realize this, the more we want to master not giving believing attention to our thoughts. And one of the things that I've practiced for years is when I see something on the news that just grabs my attention, either because, you know, the first thought is that that's so horrible, you know, that's so horrible, or something like that. What I do is I immediately pull it back, and I realize that that scene that I'm watching, that I'm, you know, was tempted to judge as horrible, is actually coming from my believing intention on thoughts just like that. That's horrible. That shouldn't be. And I bring it back, and I choose not to give those believing attention to those types of thoughts now. And I sit there and I watch whatever is happening on the news, and I remember if I continue to give believing attention to that now, I'm just going to make more appearances like that. And I just stay focused on the fact that that I am consciousness, and that whatever consciousness gives a believing attention to creates. You know, I think Jesus said in the Course something like, all thoughts become manifest in some way, or something very similar to that, right? And so learning to withhold our believing attention is really important. And that takes us to today. Today, day 336, I just gave a brief review of contemplation, meditation, and devotion, because these are going to be our three primary practices as we move into year three. Contemplation, again, is receiving guidance or wisdom from within. And I reviewed, again, asking open-ended questions like, what am I to see here? What would you like me to know, et cetera, et cetera? What would you like to share with me today? Meditation, again, is that focus time on letting go of the faults and immersing ourselves in the true. And as I mentioned, there's audios on the website to help with that in year three. Devotion. Devotion is the word that's being put on living from both the loving all method and surrender. Called living from within. It's called devotion. Loving all method plus surrender. That's living a devoted life. And then I also gave you all some criteria. I did this at the end of year one too. I don't know if you remember. I gave you some criteria so you could determine for yourself whether you're ready to move on to the next year or not. And so I did that today to help you decide if you're ready to go to year three or not. I said that the three things that you're really going to need in year three is, one, you need to be able to hear or intuit insight from within. You're not going to have daily tips guiding you regarding your insight every day. This insight needs to come within. And I said that if you've been writing with inner wisdom throughout the last year as we contemplated these thoughts of awakening, you're good to go. You're ready. But if that's something you didn't do, if you were just kind of reading the tips and not writing with inner wisdom, you might be challenged in year three because there aren't going to be tips. You know, all of your insight and wisdom needs to come from within you. If you feel like you didn't apply yourself to listening to your own inner teacher in year two, you really have a couple of choices. One, you could go ahead and start year three and see once you apply yourself if that wisdom comes, because it might come pretty quickly. Or you could just go back and review year two and apply yourself and do it with the thoughts of awakening and then go to year three next year. And that's completely up to you. I'm not going to tell people what year they should be in. This is up to you and your intuition and your guidance. If you happen to start year three, and you find that you know, you're sitting down with the quotes and nothing's coming and you just feel like nothing's happening for you, you can always at that point go back to year two. So it's okay to start it, see what kind of an experience you have. I think probably anyone who has been contemplating the thoughts of awakening and writing with it most days is going to be ready for year three. Also, some other things that you're going to need in year three is you need to trust inner wisdom more than your own thoughts or perceptions. That's really important. You know, like the idea is someone was a real jerk to me. I mean, he was a jerk. I was there. You know, you saw him, right, Sam? He was a jerk. You know, we all agree this guy was a jerk. That's your perception, right? So when you sit down with inner wisdom, you need to be willing to get a different point of view about that scenario and why you're upset. And you need to believe it, whatever inner wisdom tells you, more than your perception that he was a jerk and I had a right to be upset. You know, if you obviously, if you think he was a jerk and you had a right to be upset, you're still in your I know and I'm right mind, completely identified with your false self. And you're probably just going to stay there. The way to get out of that is to trust inner wisdom more. And you need to go to inner wisdom with, you know, you could do it this way. This is the way I used to do it. I believe that he was a jerk. I believe that I had a right to be upset. That's just putting down the perception. Now, what would you like to show me? You know, and then surrender, right? It's okay to put that perception down. And I always said, I believe, because of what those words meant to me. Those words meant to me, this is what I believe, but that doesn't mean it's true. I believe was different than I know. I know he was a jerk meant one thing. I believe he was a jerk. That's what I believe. But there's an opening in that for me to see where I'm wrong. So I would often write down, here's what I believe, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now what would you like to show me? So there was an opening in there. But again, you have to be willing to trust inner wisdom more than your own individual thoughts or perceptions. And then the third thing that you're going to need in year three is to be fully committed to your inner teacher. You just need to really surrender. If your inner teacher says something like, today, every hour, I'd like you to stop and say, if I keep judging, I'm going to keep hurting myself, then you want to do that every hour that day, or at least to the best of your ability. Lots of people write wonderful clarity and wonderful guidance with their inner teacher in the morning and get up and walk away from it and never give it another thought at all for the whole rest of the day. And that's just not helpful. You need to see whatever you receive from your inner teacher that morning as your daily bread, and you need to dine on that bread all day long. Jacqueline was here today and she happened to see in my inbox where when I do my contemplation in the morning, I then send it to my own inbox. And the reason for that is I check email multiple times throughout the day. So every time I check email, I see that there. I see my own contemplation right there in my inbox and I can open it and review it, right? So you might need to learn little tricks like that to make sure that you aren't writing something magnificent, but then walking away from it and never paying attention to it again. Just send it to yourself. That's what I do. And that's it. Oh, and look at the time. You see the time? It's perfect. So I did talk all the way till 10 p.m. Didn't even do it on purpose. All right. So just keep following the tips. As I mentioned, you're still in the review. You'll have a couple more days of year two review, and then you start an entire a second time through Inner Ramana. And of course, we'll meet same time right here next week. Thanks, y'all, for being with me tonight. Bye.